The horses were bone-tired after 4 days of carrying an inordinate amount of grizzly meat and pelts on their broad backs. Each day they had set up camouflage netting and rested. Each day they had made love. Rona had never felt happier in her life. Rock let himself enjoy her attentions. He knew there wasn't much time for them. Death was always one step behind. Death had gravitated to Ted Roxon many times, had come knocking on the door to take him away. And each time Rock had kicked it in the nuts and told it to fuck off, that he wasn't ready to die. But even he knew that in the game of death, the cards were stacked. Death won every hand. At last, they reached the southwest entrance to Century City.
What? Why did the call change?
The guard at Preston ratted us out.
There is nothing like a
game.
Correct. It's good to see you again, Rock. And you brought... Wow, that's a lot of meat.
What's the matter, Wrath?
It happened an hour ago, Rock. One of the maintenance crews for the solar supply was spotted and captured by a Blackshirt patrol. Our scout was watching with binoculars and saw it happen. Two choppers just popped up out of the sky and surrounded the men. They didn't have a chance without weapons and were taken. The Reds didn't see us and had no reason to think there was anyone else. Poor bastards. Armstrong, Gill, Fitz, and Scranton. They'll all be tortured to death for sure.
Roxon didn't let on that the situation was far worse than that. With the new Mindbreakers, the four captured free fighters might, would, talk. Century City would be just a smoldering memory, like Westfort, within 24 hours.
Does the Council know?
Yeah, they're talking about it right now.
Take the horses. Rona, I gotta...
I know. I'll go with Wrath. See you later.
The 50-man council was in session, debating emergency procedures to deal with the recent capture. Roxon stormed into the council chamber, beside himself with rage at the taking of the prisoners. All eyes turned toward the sweaty, clothes-torn Rock, his eyes blazing with a mad fire as he made his way to the podium of the oval-shaped chamber.
Members of the council, I have just received the news of the capture. We all know what awaits our four men in Stalinville. We all know what awaits them there, the poor bastards. We must immediately mount a rescue operation and attack. It's not just their lives I'm thinking of, but with this new mind-breaker machine the Reds have, these men will talk. We already know they made Preston talk, and we saw what the result of that was. There isn't time for bullshit. Every minute could mean the difference between life and death for every man, woman, and child in Century City.
Now, just a minute, Rock. This is a democratic council. All the decisions must be approved by a vote. No man, even you, can just come in here and dictate what we must do.
Well then, Rastus, debate and vote. But let's get on with it.
He stepped down from the podium and, glaring at the council, threw himself down in one of the front rows of circular seats that ringed the central raised platform of the chamber. Councilman Rastus, as the eldest member of the council, was given the protocol of speaking first. He rose slowly and walked with a stately dignity toward the redwood podium.
Ladies and gentlemen of the council, we have all heard Mr. Roxon's request for an attack on Stalinville. Now, without belittling the ultimate American, I do believe that his demand is impulsive, reckless, and dangerous. Now, you all know my position. I have long believed that an accommodation can be worked out with the Russians. After all, our free cities are functioning quite smoothly, even in the midst of their occupation. They can't get us, and we can't get them. I'm sure that were we to try to deal with them rationally, they would only be too willing to settle things. We could both share this land. It's big enough. They're wasting billions of rubles every year fighting us. I believe, therefore, that to attack Stalinville now would be the height of foolishness and would precipitate a violent counterattack, not just against us, but perhaps the free cities all over America.
Rock could scarcely believe his ears. His face turned red, and it took all his self-control to stop from screaming at the appeaser. As was the rule of the council, the next speaker presented an opposing point of view. George Shekel, a man Roxon knew and trusted, walked quickly to the podium, dressed in his ever-present tweed sports jacket, threads hanging from the sleeves, arms swinging loosely around his tall, thin body. Shekel stood almost 6'10" and was easily the tallest man in Century City. But at a weight of just under 165 pounds, he was like a walking scarecrow, all bone and tendon.
You have all listened to Mr. Rastas, who we all respect, and who often has presented valuable ideas to this chamber. But tonight, I believe he is making a grave mistake. Number one, those men are ours. They are about to be tortured beyond anything any of us here can even imagine. Secondly, if they do talk, and from what I've heard of this new mind-breaker machine, they will, all of Century City could be lost, smoking ruins like Westfort. We would be cast back out in the wastelands, those of us who even managed to survive, savages again, like our ancestors after the war. But thirdly, and most importantly, I must take serious disagreement with the idea of accommodating the Russians. There is no accommodation possible with murderers. Good Lord, man. They've already destroyed most of our country, enslaved all the Americans around the Red Forts, and just bombed Westfort, our closest neighbor, with more atomic weapons. Something they vowed in those leaflets of theirs they'd never use again. No. I don't trust the Russian barbarians. I never have, and I never will. We must respond with an attack. Now, I may not agree with Rock's impulse to send out a team tonight. I think it must be a well-organized force of perhaps 200 men. We could make a plan over the next 24 hours and get a well-equipped attack force together with a much greater chance of success.
The debate raged on for almost 2 hours, with nearly every speaker getting his or her views in. The arguing grew increasingly raucous, with members booing each other and yelling out insults. The council chamber had rarely witnessed such explosions of feeling. But then they were debating the very future of their city, their lives. As the highest-ranking military officer of Century City, Roxon was given the opportunity to speak last before the vote was taken. He rose from his seat, where he had been taking it all in, and stepped to the platform behind the podium. He looked down at the floor for a moment, gathering his thoughts, knowing that this could well be the most important speech he would ever make, and began.
You are the democratically elected representatives of the citizens of Century City, and I must respect each and every one of you. For the tradition of democracy and debate is the one feature of our society that enables us to be a million times stronger than the Soviets could ever be. But I can scarcely believe the things I'm hearing here tonight. Are those of you who are opposed to saving our men's lives, those who want to deal with the Reds on a rational basis, so naive as to think that they would really live up to their word, or even want to try? Their aim is total and complete destruction of all free Americans. As a soldier, a fighter who has spent his entire life battling against the Red murderers, I have seen what they are really like. I have seen them wipe out whole villages, have watched them as they lined up women and children and shot them point blank in the face. I've seen them rape and behead and take Americans' lives as if they were so many ants to be stepped on. Believe me, there is no way in hell to work out an accommodation with the Russians. The only thing we must work for, that my whole life has been devoted to, is to drive out the invader. Every last one, dead or alive. But it is beyond that. You've been debating philosophically. There's a time for that. But the bottom line is this. They have taken five of us prisoner. In the past, with our mind blocks, these men would have been able to stand up to any torture the Red Beast would have inflicted on them. If five men were to die, well, they gave their lives as any of us would do. But the situation has changed. The Reds now have the Mindbreaker. We still don't know a hell of a lot about how it works. But one thing we do know, it does work. They captured Preston, and Preston was a good, tough man. I knew him. Worked with him several times. They had him for just hours, and Westfort was reduced to a city of corpses. That's why we can't delay. At this very moment, those men could be in one of those hellish devices telling them everything. It's not a question of courage or betrayal. Whatever the Russians have, works. Ladies and gentlemen, Century City is in grave danger. We can't wait even one extra hour. There's no need for a large force. I propose going in there with just 8 men. Surprise them. Christ, they're not expecting an attack on their biggest fortress in the region. A 200-man force would just get bogged down in a battle for days, a battle that we would lose. No, it must be a surprise with a small group of the best fighting men of the city. And it must be tonight.
Roxon met every eye, made them feel his anger and his drive, and then walked from the podium. Willis rose and quickly called for a vote.
All those for Roxon's plan, please raise your hand. 39 for, 11 against. The plan is passed. It's up to you now, Rock. God help you.
The MS-12 and MS-13 came through the high mountain pass at Wilkerson. Their crews exhausted from the dangerous twists and turns down the narrow, rocky canyons behind them. They flew on automatic low pilot, the two choppers moving in a line about 800 yards apart for safety. There was a slow turn in the pass a mile ahead, a lazy turn that the autopilot would handle. But there was one thing they hadn't considered. Not flying close to one another, the helicopters would be out of sight of each other for about a minute on that long turn. Roxon and his 8-man attack force were camouflaged, huddled into round shapes like small boulders, their Liberator rifles under them, equipped with grenade launchers. Any minute now, the run from Volgograd would roar by. All 8 free fighters and Rock would jump up when the first one had passed, and, he hoped, blast the second one to Kingdom Come. Then, would the first chopper, not realizing what had happened, come back to look for its friend? He hoped so, for everyone's sake.
I hear him. Me too. They're coming in low and dead-eyed. Their autos are on. Hell, they'll probably have a sleep.
Stay sharp. Everybody prep your grenade launchers.
Hold it. Hold it. Hold it! Fire! All right!
Well done!
Good job, everybody. Now take cover again. Be sure to swing back around.
Roxon could scarcely see through the tiny slit in the canvas opening as the 4, then 5, and 6 Russians climbed down. Their rifles were dangling over their shoulders. Evidently, they weren't suspicious.
Free fighters, now! I'm going inside, cover me! All clear. Everybody aboard.
That's right. A little bloody, but it'll do.
I am to please. Going up!
The crew of 9 sat around the center of the chopper, talking over final plans for the raid. Rock had picked up what he considered the 8 best all-around fighters in Century City, each one a seasoned Red Killer, as well as an expert in some area of warfare. Norton and Sanford, explosives; Smith and Jurgens, computers; Detroit and McCaughlin, cover; Pasquale, decoder, and a damn good medic; and Chen, fighter par excellence. All Chen carried were 2 steel-tipped nunchucks, his deadliest weapon. Rock flew the red helicopter down the mountain canyon that the Russian pilot had been bearing toward before being so rudely interrupted. Once they had built up airspeed, he set it back on auto. Now the damn thing would fly them right through the gates of Stalinville. In 5 minutes, they would be picked up by the red defensive radar screens of Stalinville, and they would demand an entry code. Pasquale frantically tore apart the Russian codebook, trying to come up with the correct sequence of codes to prevent their being shot right out of the sky. The city came into view over a ridge, down below in the distance.
Pasquale, I could use that code.
Just one more second.
Incoming vehicle, please identify yourself.
Every Red occupation soldier had been drafted. Men from every corner of the globe worked together. As a result, they could barely communicate with each other and had to resort to a common language. English, as the global language for commerce before the bombs dropped, had served quite well, as everybody had learned to speak it well enough to get by. The leaders back in Russia didn't mind. As long as they did their jobs, any pigeon speak would serve.
Pasquale, I can pretend not to hear for only so long.
Almost got it.
Identification. I repeat, I require identification on helicopter coming in on Vector 5 East Stalinville.
Pasquale.
I got it. 1, 23, 12, no, 14.
Helicopter, Vector 5 East Stalinville, this is your last warning.
Which one is it?
It's 14.
Identification on helicopter Vector 5 East Stalinville. 1-23-23-14.
Acknowledged. Proceed to scheduled landing site, KGB Center.
Phew! It's a good thing the Reds have to write the damn things down for their peasant-brained troops, right?
Right.
Stalinville grew until it loomed below them, the Russian military fortress taking up nearly half the city area. The rest was the rundown American sector, which even from the sky they could see was filthy and crumbling. About a mile off, Rock saw the KGB Rocky Mountain Control Building, a 30-story brown X-shaped structure without a single window in the place. The landing pad was on the roof. Above the helipad, coming from the center of the X, stood a tall, thin control tower. Rock and the other free fighters had gone over the smuggled plans again and again, the emergency stairs at the far end of each wing. But stolen plans were vague as to what exactly was on each floor. He knew that the interrogation area was on the west arm of the X, on one of the bottom 3 levels designated A, B, and C. And he knew as well that about 100 yards off the east wing was a low brick bunker, nearly 400 feet long, that Resistance Intel had pinpointed as a main armory for both Red Army and KGB munitions for the fort. The only other, but potentially most valuable, info was that the computer room, which controlled all functions of the building, plus the sensitive alarm and intercom systems, was on the H level, 6th floor, east wing. This much of a picture of the KGB building that ran the operations for the Northwest sector of the USA would have to serve them well. Over the years, a half dozen cleaning personnel had been killed sneaking it out. As near as Rock could figure it, Stalinville was on the location of the old American city of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Someday, when they took the land back from the Reds, it would be called Cheyenne again. But for now, the plan was to destroy everything they could while rescuing the prisoners, and Rock meant to carry out the mandate of the Council, even if it meant his death. The X-shaped roof got larger and larger as the chopper they had stolen circled in on a landing approach. The uniforms they were wearing had been taken from Century City supplies, collected over the years from encounters with the enemy. Everyone's outfit either draped loosely over their shoulders and shoes, or seemed skin tight. It would have to do. They didn't intend to spend much time on the landing pad anyway. And after that, well, they hadn't come to talk fashion. The 8 free fighters and Rock looked silently at one another as they stood by the side door. They knew that this could well be the last time some of them were ever seen again. The crew stepped out onto the windswept roof, The ground crewman, his work done, had already stepped away. Somebody in a work smock covered with grease inspected the rotors, checked something off on a clipboard, and walked away to file his report. The nine attack force members walked quickly over to the main exit door, not daring to look up at the control tower staff, who, in fact, paid them no mind at all. Not having ever had an attack mounted on their citadel of death in the 50 years of its existence, other than an occasional bagman throwing a bottle at the ground-level electrified gate, they were not exactly alert. Rock stared down the central space of the stairway, some 40 flights down.
We don't have much time. Let's move.
Rock took the lead, then Detroit and Chen, his nunchucks now out and ready. Things went fine until they reached level M.
Hey, who the hell?
Detroit!
Damn, Chen, that was awesome.
Shh!
What?
Just making sure there's nobody else around. Come on. We got another 10 stories to go.
It took them 4 minutes to reach A-level. Just outside the exit, he gathered the men together for a final briefing.
You all know the plan, but let's go over it once more quickly. We free every American still alive, arm them with red weapons if possible, and then we break into three teams. Sanford heads to the team that exits out A-level. He cuts through the barbed wire around the armory and plants the charges. You, McCaughlin, head the second team. You get to the control tower on the roof. Secure it. Give cover fire to Sanford, and keep out any visitors who might show up with your RDPs and liberators. Detroit, Juergens, Chen, and I hit the computer room and do our thing to the building. Then all three teams take out as many death's heads as possible and meet on the helipad for home at 0500. That gives us exactly 30 minutes. Good luck, men. We'll need it.